This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Marina Bracco. How are you, Marina?
Very well indeed.
Excellent, excellent. You're the sommelier at Ottomezzo Bambina?
Ottomezzo Bambina, Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong, which is a three-star Michelin restaurant, which we talked about last week.
Exactly.
One of the things about Michelin star restaurants is they always try to position themselves at the top end. You know, you don't see a Michelin star doing, well, do you see Michelin stars doing burgers and chips?
No, I haven't. I've never seen so far.
I never thought, that's not sort of what I think of either.
Even though I like burger and chips.
So do I sometimes. A lot of the time. But at the top end, you know, there's always this perception of luxury. You know, luxury is something, but it's quite an amorphous, you know, it's a hard thing to define. So I'd really like to just talk about what you think luxury is. And I've got some views that might be a little bit controversial. So it would be quite nice to have a bit of a debate about that. So what do you think, you know, in your restaurant, do you think luxury is important?
Okay, in my restaurant, I think luxury is important, yes, of course. It's a restaurant for its nature. The positioning is quite medium to high. And so I think it's important, but we don't have to be obsessed about the luxury, I think. Because during the year, I learned that, and I was speaking yesterday about the native grapes, Italian native grapes, and with the simple winery, even not too expensive, which they make my customer having a great time, even in the degustation menu with the wine, or even when they come to the bar and have a glass of wine. So I think luxury is important, but we don't have to focus only on that when you are in a three Michelin star. You need to look at a 360 degree.
Yeah, I suppose sometimes if you focus on luxury too much, you'll end up being like Donald Trump and everything's gold and blingy and you know, new rich and all this sort of stuff.
Exactly. You know, the luxury is the customer that decides. If you want to be luxury when it comes, or you want to be in a different trip, and you want me to bring him a different trip and show him something different, I think.
Okay. What do you think? So obviously some of your customers want luxury, some people don't. What do you think luxury is to you?
But this is a million-dollar question.
I know, it's a good one, isn't it? and it is a million-dollar question.
I think luxury is, the definition of luxury for me is, luxury is something that makes you happy. For me, luxury is, for example, some very simple things sometimes. And that is my luxury. And of course, seeing a lot of people, they come from the hotel in Hong Kong, they book the table in the biggest hotel with a five-star, they book the table in Hong Kong, they want some luxury, yes. So we have everything to make them happy. And I think for what I see the customer, there are some different point of view about luxury.
Can you give me...
Yeah, basically, people want to go, for example, talking about wine, they want to go with the usual suspect, like luxury products.
Classics.
And they don't move from there. Or people, they intend a luxury, they intend a very rare Barolo, 1,000 bottle production, but not super expensive, but something that you cannot find in any restaurant of the world.
Exclusivity.
Exactly. For somebody is exclusivity, and for somebody is just branding.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. I tried to brainstorm before you came about what I think luxury is or things. I wrote down a couple of words. Time. You know, time is... luxury.
Time is luxury, yeah. Definitely.
and to feel not rushed or anything like that, perhaps?
Definitely, you're right. Time is luxury, in especially in a 3 Michelin star in a urban city like Hong Kong, to go there, enjoy like a 6-course menu degustation or a la carte, but spending your time and in a very relaxed room like Hotel Mezzo Bombana, because one of our strengths is to be, even though we are 3 Michelin stars, is to be very relaxed and to make people spending time in our restaurant. I think time is the most luxury things that we have right now in the world.
Yeah. What about, like, one of the things you talked about in your presentation is that you've got a big food cost. You know, your cost is, you spend a lot of money on ingredients.
Yes, we spend a lot of money on ingredients because we take the best from Japan, the best lamb from France, the best veal
from... No, the best lamb comes from New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, of course. Definitely. I live in Australia. I eat a lot of lamb from New Zealand, and I have to say that we have some great lamb also in New Zealand.
Just that I better correct you there. Where I was going with this is that the focus on the ingredients, that is, to me, sometimes luxury, particularly for some people, not always, but is detail, attention to detail. And when you're charging enough, you've got the time to spend on that detail. I look at you and you are immaculately turned out. You know, I'm in a loose cotton, I iron my shirt, but you wouldn't tell, baggy. By Italian standards, scruffy. Whereas you are absolutely immaculate, you know.
Thank you.
It's detail.
It's detail, yes. Luxury can be also detail. Detail in the way we prepare the restaurant before the service, in the information that we have in our system about our customer that we look after. And so once they come, we know already the plan for the night. If there is a celebration, which kind of water the customer drink, these all little details, these are luxury.
Yeah. I wrote down enjoyment, which is what you sort of said about happiness as well.
Definitely. The best comment that I can get, we always talk with Chef Bombana also, is of course food is good, service is good, but the best compliment that the customer give me is that when they go there, they really feel at home and they really enjoy the vibe of the room. This is the most beautiful things, I guess, because we make them comfortable.
Yeah.
Every kind of customer that we have, from the most sophisticated to the young people just facing the first time in a 3 Michelin star, we want to make them happy. We have 15 table, 15 final of Champions League lunch, and 15 final of Champions League at dinner. Nobody escape.
So at dinner, 15?
Finals, like very important. Very important. It's like we play in the final of football, League.
Yeah.
In every table.
Yeah.
So we need to please as much as we can the table. Being not fake, because I don't like the fake things. Yeah. I don't like the fake floor in the restaurant when I see a lot of people very stiff with a lot of things, and they smile, but they are not. They don't want to smile.
Yeah.
Everything needs to come naturally. And these I teach the guys how to train for this.
Yeah, because sometimes when you go to high-end places, they can be a little bit snooty.
Exactly. It's not. We don't like to be like this. We like to be ourselves. We have a customer, they come also 3-4 times a week to eat with us. And they are so comfortable that it's my pleasure to have. And if they come 4 times a week, it means that they feel like home.
Yeah. Okay, what about stories? Whenever people are selling wines, they're often, you hear it all the time in the wine trade. It's all about the story of the wine. But when you were talking last week about how you choose wine, you're asking more simple questions. Do you give stories, or is that not really what your sommeliers do?
And of course, it depends on what the customer wants to hear. It depends on what do you have in front. If it's a business lunch and they want to choose wine and they want to be choosing fast, and then they want you to get out of the table, or somebody that wants to know more. So you have to be able to understand what the customer want at that precise moment. And this is very important, because if some customer want to go deep to know about that wine, of course, it's our pleasure to go. But if the customer is just choosing the wine for his customer that is attending the dinner, we don't want to be on the table, just the time enough to serve them.
Okay, that's all good. What about exclusivity? You mentioned that last week as well. Exclusivity is something that some people find is quite important for their enjoyment.
Exclusivity, as I said, in my speech, I had a question about exclusivity from one person from the public. They didn't understand exclusivity. When the importer come to me, the supplier, they give me a particular wine, come to me, and they tell me, "I give you the exclusivity on this product." I always say no, because they kill the wine. I want everybody to have in the city the same wine. So the Italian wine moves, and everybody have, and we create a continuity in a product, which is very different if I'm the only one getting, and then I don't consume it much, and then after 6 months they stop to import it. Whereas the
continuity is quite important for you.
Continuity in the of the market of the product is very important, because it gives us a lot of different weapons to work with, and the other exclusivity. The one of the public asked me, it was about when a winery give the exclusivity in a nation to only one importer or few importer. I think the exclusivity is that way is very important, especially in a market like Hong Kong, which is very small. And if you have two supplier contending all the restaurant, maybe a big clash between them, and nobody of them is going to work well. So if you have one, for sure is going to position in the bottle in the right restaurants.
No, I don't quite understand that, Marino. Can you?
Yeah. Basically, when we talk about exclusivity for the supplier, from the winery to a supplier, I don't like this. Because when you have two suppliers in the same city with the same product, they're going to end up having a clash because a competitor with the same products. And it's not good for the product, but it's not good also for them, which they invest a lot of money, and they are brave to import in another nation one product, and then they see somebody else as well giving that product. So I think a winery should reward somebody that is brave to bring them overseas.
Yep.
With exclusivity.
Okay. So you're talking about something you mentioned in the presentation about parallel importing in
exactly,
Hong Kong.
Exactly.
I'm from New Zealand, and in New Zealand, parallel importing was illegal for a long period of time. If you had a supply contract, you had an exclusive right to sell that product in the UK, but in New Zealand, but they changed that and parallel importing. And I think for a lot of products, that's fine because it drives down price and gives people options. But you're saying it's not necessarily the best thing in a small market like Hong Kong.
Yeah, it's not only the best, because some parallel importer, basically, they get from the wine from basically one winery is giving to only one supplier. Let's say New Zealand is giving only one supplier, and then the other supplier, he have the same wine, but maybe he took from lab to take the wine from maybe some wine auction or some other private customer. We don't know the wine how it's been stored, so many things. So. Whereas if there is only one, you know that the wine did only one step from the winery to the importer. And this is more safe, because also you need to be careful what you give to customer. The customer is paying, so you need to give the wine as its best.
Yeah, especially in Hong Kong and China, where counterfeit wine is quite an issue.
Of course.
That I don't know how you feel about it, but China, to me, is one of the biggest concerns about counterfeit wine, because there is almost an industry there producing some top wines.
This one, I'm not very expert with China, but of course this one can be one reason to, if there is the fake bottle, they say, one way to eliminate this is, it would be no parallel import, and letting everybody know that we have one supplier only. Like Romane Conti, for example, in Petrus, in Hong Kong, they have one supplier, and we all refer to that one. We don't take, there is Ips, Romane Conti, and Petrus in the market, but I never take with anybody. I take from the supplier.
Yeah, because at least then you know.
Yeah, I know, because I have big responsibility. When you sell one bottle at 10,000 euro, you have a big responsibility. You cannot, you put in your face, yeah, the face of the restaurant. So it's very important to give the quality to the customer.
Yeah, okay. I want to talk a wee bit about some of the work you did in terms of opening up the Hong Kong market for Italian producers. During your presentation yesterday, you were talking about choosing wines, but then making them available to other like-minded restaurants.
Yes. Basically, when I moved to Hong Kong, I realized I was coming from the Australian market. So, and there were a lot of more things available in the Australian market, which is in the other side of the world, than in Hong Kong, which was led by French wines. So we start to give input to the supplier to go and get me that product from Sicily, get me the product from Sardinia. And then when the product was arriving, I was getting all my friends sommelier that I met when I arrived. And I say, guys, this product is very good. You should list as well. Have a look. What do you think? And so doing this, we created a sort of continuity that we spoke earlier. And not only me getting a wine that I believe and I ask the importer to get me, but also a few other sommelier.
Yeah. So by having more people.
Yeah, I like to share. I like to share my knowledge with the other sommelier. Also, there are sommelier, French sommelier, that they like to share some knowledge with me. In wine, you never finish to improve and to learn and to study. It's very huge. It's getting very huge. There are more country that are producing wine right now. So it's very good to listen sometimes. A good sommelier is, you need to be the one good thing that a sommelier should do is listening.
Yeah. Okay. I must admit, my discussion about luxury didn't go the way I thought it would, because you've got a very relaxed approach to luxury, and I normally think of particularly the high end being more uptight, and it does seem that you've got a more relaxed approach.
I have a more relaxed approach with luxury because I see every day. I see the biggest brand. I see the things going out every day from the list. So people buy. There are some customer choice, and which we cannot say it is our choice, because luxury, everybody knows what the product already. The marketing is good. And me, for example, I'm very good fans of Krug. I really love Krug.
Oh, yeah.
And, but also the other people knows about Krug. Yeah. So this is, it's easy to sell that one.
Yeah. Okay. When you first came into the restaurant, you said that, in your presentation, that a lot of the wines, about half, for an Italian restaurant, about half your wines were French.
Yes, the list was half French, half Italian, and the way the approach was to the customer was, in Hong Kong, people like French, I've been told in the beginning. And I've been told many things like, in Hong Kong, this thing you want to do, it doesn't work. Okay, I did all the opposite. I tried to give a big slap to the Italian market in Hong Kong, and I start to implement a lot of grape varietal, and to take off the comfort island of the customer, and by replacing with Italian native grape varietal, with the same pretty much characteristic. Like, for example, if somebody is looking for Pinot Noir, we like to them to go with a beautiful Nerello Mascalese from Mount Etna, for example. Or if somebody is looking for a Chardonnay, we like them to go with a beautiful Verdicchio, which is a body, acidity, and they can have a beautiful longevity. So we give the option, and this way of work, it gave me so much satisfaction in the last 4 years. I didn't believe in the beginning. I was convinced, but I didn't know what was going to be the outcome. But after that, after a few months, I understood that we were doing the right job.
Okay. The nice thing about that is if you're an Italian restaurant, you really should be promoting Italian wines.
Of course, because sometimes, you know, when you go in, for example, me, I love international grape varietal. Of course, I push the Italian, but I love Chardonnay, I love Sauvignon Blanc from Sancerre, I love Burgundy. But when you go, for example, in a classic French restaurant, you know that you're going to start your pairing with Loire Valley or Alsace. Then you will go with the Chardonnay, with a little bit of body. Then you go with Pinot Noir, and you end up with Bordeaux. So this is the typical.
Yeah.
Before you sit in Ottamezzo, you don't know what is going to be the scale of the wine.
Tell me a couple of slightly difficult questions for you. What's your favorite Italian wine? And I know everybody says, oh, which is your favorite child?
Nebbiolo.
Nebbiolo?
Nebbiolo. Nebbiolo for the red, and
does it have to be Barolo, or could it be anything for Roero?
No, because now we have a lot of things of great quality. Also outside of Piemonte, with the Valtellina, for example, with the great Nebbiolo there. And I think Roero also making good stuff now. So, of course, Barolo is the top of the quality. The average quality of all the producer Barolo is getting higher every year.
Okay. And what do you think the up-and-coming region in Italy is?
The up-and-coming region are the region they used to have work with a lot of wine, but they give away the wine to the bulk production in some other region, like, for example, now is the turn of Sicily. Did a boom now, but also I'm expecting Sardinia and Puglia.
Okay, yeah, we tasted a load of wines from Sardinia yesterday, and some of them were very good. Some of them were quite ropey.
Yes, some of them we still need to fine-tune a couple of things.
Yeah.
In order to have this great wine in the biggest table, in the biggest restaurant.
Yeah, lovely. All right then, Marino, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Cheers.